Allstate wants to remind fans that mayhem is everywhere, like at your pregame barbecue. While you prep your meats, that grease trap you forgot to empty is prepping to smoke your porch, garage, and the car inside. And without the right home and auto insurance coverage, the cost to repair this could eat up your savings. So bundle home and auto with Allstate to save and get protected from mayhem like this. Bundled savings vary and are not available in every state. Coverage is subject to policy terms and conditions.
There are some things that are too good to keep a secret. Like how your Amex Platinum card helps you have the perfect trip. I'd like to check into the Centurion Lounge. Or how it seems like you always get those hard-to-snag tables.
Ooh, yum.
And how you get the most out of select can't-miss events. With access to the Centurion Lounge, Resi Priority Notified, and Amex card member benefits at select events, you'll have to share. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
You know our trusted partner, TireRack.com, for their fast, free shipping, free road hazard protection, convenient installation options, and their great selection of best tires, like the highly consumer-rated Pirelli Scorpion Weather Active. But did you know they sell other automotive products? Wheels, brakes, suspension, just to name a few. Go to TireRack.com/Colin. TireRack.com, the way tire buying should be.
The Volume.
The thrill and excitement of March Mania is here. And DraftKings Sportsbook, one of America's top-rated sportsbook apps, is giving new customers a shot to turn $5 into $150 instantly in bonus bets with any college basketball bet. North Carolina listeners, don't forget DraftKings Sportsbook is now live in your state. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app and use code JOHN, J-O-H-N. New customers can bet $5 to get $150 instantly in bonus bets only at DraftKings Sportsbook with code JOHN. The crown is yours.
Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Or in West Virginia, visit 1-800-GAMBLER.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly. On behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort in Kansas, 21 and over, age varies by jurisdiction. Void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.co/bball for eligibility and deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources.
What is going on, everybody? John Middlecoff, 3 and Out Podcast. How are we doing, my people? It is recording this on Tuesday. Here's the game plan. We're going to do a little football stuff today. The situation going on with Rashee Rice and the Chiefs and how that impacts just stuff we talk about in the draft constantly. Something I saw Ryan Poles and the Bears are doing, which I think is pretty cool when it comes to including your scouting staff. And then just some news and notes. Wentz signs with the Chiefs. Hassan Reddick was traded to the Jets. And a little tangent Tuesday on women's college basketball. A couple games I watched, which who would have thought I would have said that a year ago. But we'll discuss some of that. I had Mike Mayock on yesterday. If you haven't had a chance, that podcast is out on the feed as well as the YouTube channel. It was really good. I highly recommend that. He was excellent. And Colin and I, we did a podcast on Easter Sunday, which came out Monday or maybe Sunday night. So we talked for about an hour about some different stuff. So we've had a lot of content here in April. No rest for the wicked around here. But other than that, the game plan is going to be podcasts all week. I'll probably do a golf podcast. You might have heard this thing called the Masters is next week. So we will definitely have be talking about that the next couple weeks. And other than that, let's see. We'll also include do a little Middlecoff mailbag on the show. At John Middlecoff is the Instagram. Fire in those DMs. Get your question answered on the show. Very, very easy to get involved. And if you listen on Colin's feed, make sure you subscribe to the 3 and Out feed. Appreciate everyone that has, as well as obviously the YouTube channel. All of our content is up there as well. So subscribe to that bad boy as well. But before we dive into some football, obviously I got to touch on and tell you about my close friends, my partners, and the official ticketing app of this podcast, Game Time. Go to your smartphone, go to your iPad, download the Game Time app. I've had multiple people text me, hey, thanks for the promo code, John, $20 off your first pair of tickets. I went to opening day for the Orioles. I went to opening day for the Dodgers. I went to opening day for the Mets, and it was cold. But if you want to go to a baseball game, an NBA playoff game, an NHL hockey playoff game, those are I've never been to one, but they're obviously always fantastic watching them on television. I'm not even a hockey guy. Concerts, comedy shows, you name it, Game Time has you covered. You can search by price point. You can search by, it gives you the view of the stadium where you would sit, and just buy a pair of tickets and use the promo code John, J-O-H-N, J-O-H-N, at checkout, save $20. Obviously, if you've been listening or watching this podcast, I know the guys that run the Chiefs pretty well. Andy and Veach and a lot of other guys in the organization. And I would say clearly, I mean, they're a current dynasty going on right now and the most well-run operation in the NFL. And it starts with Andy and the quarterback, Patrick Mahomes, as well as Veach. But one thing Andy has always kind of hung his hat on over the years, and I would say Belichick, you know, was kind of the opposite, though it's impossible to be an NFL head coach and not take some quote-unquote flyers on guys, is, you know, he's willing to look the other way when it comes to talent. And part of winning in professional sports is you don't have a choice. You have to do that, right? Now, ideally, when you do that, a guy matures and changes. But a huge part of this draft process, and we talk about it constantly on this show, I talked about it constantly when I was in the NFL, and we talked about it when I was in college football under Pat Hill at Fresno State, is character, is maturity. And it's not always black and white with a guy. Like, he's been arrested, he's a bad guy. He had a situation, he's an awful human being. Some's like, yeah, he's just a little immature. You know, I don't, you know, he's got some stuff to work on. He didn't always treat his teammates the best. And then you have to decipher, is this something that a young man at 19, 20, 21 years old can get better at, can grow inside your organizations? It's why the best organizations, when they take flyers on a guy with some question marks, can get them on the straight and narrow inside their operation because of the character, because of the type players they already have, right? If the Ravens or the Chiefs or the 49ers draft a guy with some question marks, it's going to be hard for that guy to act like an idiot inside a meeting room, at practice. It's not going to be tolerated. It's why forever, now Belichick didn't do it often, but it was hard. You wouldn't last. They'll eat you alive. And for the most part, once you get a guy and the season starts in training camp, like it's really hard to not color within the lines as a player, even when you're young and quote-unquote have some maturity. And I've said this forever. I think we as guys mature a little later, right? I can't imagine at 21, 22 years old. I'm very fortunate that cell phones and social media and all that stuff did not exist when I was in college. And I was not some star athlete. I was just a normal college kid. And anyone my age, probably in their mid-30s or older, probably would agree. Thank God, high school, college, this stuff did not exist. So times are a lot different. But the thing with the NFL, unlike college, is when the season ends, you have months of free time. You don't have to do anything with the team. Now, when you play for a team like the Chiefs, your season ends much later, right? In the middle of February. Then from about whenever the Super Bowl is over until whenever OTA start, you can do whatever the hell you want. That's not the case in college, right? You get, hell, if you're on a good team, you don't even get Christmas break. There's no Thanksgiving break. The only break you really get as a college player is spring break. Other than that, you are around your team, your coaching staff, your strength staff, the majority of the year. I'm talking 365. The fall, the spring, the summer. Like, you're not just going home for the summer and dicking around. you live in Athens, Georgia, in SC, in Austin, Texas, and you work out with the squad. Now you have free, you're not going to class or whatever, but 3, 4, 5 days a week, you are training hard. And in football, you know, in college football now, you know, top guys have money. But I think we talk about it probably a little too loosely about how much money's getting thrown around. Like, quarterbacks have a lot of money. Some of the star players have money, but most of these guys aren't rolling in hundreds of thousands of dollars, let alone millions. So you see this Rashee Rice situation, which I know as much as you do. I saw the initial story, then I saw the TMZ video of the two cars racing and the crash happening. Clearly everyone left, right? Which any older person would be like, hey, bro, if that's your car, whether you were driving, whether you were not driving, and you just leave it, like this thing called car registration, a license plate, they're going to figure out who owns the fucking car. Now, the video, it's clear the guy was there. But to me, this speaks to, and this is the unquantifiable part of drafting, is like, yeah, guy might be immature. And I don't know that much about Rashee Rice off the field in college. Did a little digging, couldn't find anything too crazy. You just hope guys make good decisions. You just hope guys surround themselves with the right people. You just hope, and you can do all you possibly can, just like a parent. Think how much stuff my parents literally couldn't have been any better in terms of discipline, in terms of forcing me on the straight and narrow, being on my ass about who I was hanging out with, about going to school, about having good grades. Yet so much of my life was out of their control. They couldn't keep me around a leash as I got into high school at night with my friends, especially in college. Those decisions came on me. Just like anyone listening, those decisions were you. Now, you were molded and shaped by who taught you things growing up, life lessons, how to act, what's the difference between right and wrong, when to say no. But you ultimately have to do that. And I think this is the scariest time for NFL teams with their young roster, because for months on end, these guys can do whatever the hell they want. And this situation, at least from what I've read, no one is seriously injured, thank God. But clearly he's going to get in trouble with the NFL. Like, he's going to be suspended. How long? I don't know. We'll have to see how some of this plays out. But I always get very angry around this time of year. And it actually seems like it's been pretty tame so far with a lot of the draft picks, is when the media gets very angry when stuff comes out about players. Like, this is the business. Trying to decipher, is the guy's character, is the guy's wiring worth paying, investing in, and drafting? Because ultimately, these are not widgets. These are human beings. Talking to Mike Mayock yesterday, Henry Ruggs had never had an issue at Alabama. There's a famous, go on YouTube, type in Nick Saban on Henry Ruggs. Ruggs had zero issues at Alabama. Not one. He would have been a guy viewed, I wouldn't call him like elite character, but he definitely was not a character red flag. And yet, on his second year, he drove 500 miles an hour into a car, killed a young girl and her dog. He will never play in the NFL again. He's currently in jail. So these decisions, listen, I'm not a huge car guy. I've had an F-150, a Tahoe. I don't give a shit. I could be worth hundreds of millions of dollars. You're not going to see me with Ferraris and Corvettes. I don't care. I also think that those cars, I'm not a huge racing guy, but the overwhelming majority of humans shouldn't be driving cars that go 180 miles an hour. They can't handle it, right? You're not Dale Earnhardt Jr. or Denny Hamlin or Lewis Hamilton. Now, when you have the money, this is a free society. You can do whatever the fuck you want. But these situations happen. And he's very, very lucky that his car, whether he was driving in the passenger seat, I don't know, only he and the group he was with knows, did not result in a situation like Ruggs. Because at the snap of a finger, your life can change. You just screwed your team. There's no way. Your decisions in February, in March, in April, in the summer, Because in the NFL, you get 40 to 50 days off in the summer once OTAs end till the start of training camp. That's on you to make the right decisions, to hang out with the right people. And this is why character is so highly discussed around the draft. We can flip on the top 20 players in this draft. They all can play. They all have a lot of talent. Roma Dunze, Malik Nabers, Joe Alt, the quarterbacks, pass rusher from Alabama. You go through it. All the top guys. A lot of talent. If they are wired the right way and focused, they will have success. The reason, now, some specifically guys fail in the NFL. They don't have the physical attributes. They're not fast enough. If they're a quarterback, they have no pocket presence. If they're a DB, they don't have any instincts. Obviously, there are limitations at the highest level why guys do and don't succeed. But I think consistently, and here's the sad part, clearly this guy's season went on, and Andy talked to me about him in the interview at the Combine, that he helped kind of change their offense as he came on toward the end of the season and throughout the playoffs. They are relying on him. The best team in the NFL is relying on this individual last year and moving forward. And now he let him down. He let him down in a big way because not only does he tarnish his own name, his own family's name, his own reputation, but he hurts his team. He hurts Patrick Mahomes, Travis Kelce, Chris Jones, Andy Reid, Brett Veach. And this is, everyone gets up in arms historically about like, oh, this shouldn't be discussed. Bullshit. This stuff leading into the draft should always be discussed because this is what separates guys in the NFL. Are you getting in trouble? Are you not getting in trouble? Any human being, whether you're a good guy, bad guy, whatever, can get in trouble at any moment if you choose to make the bad decisions. If you put yourself in harm's way. My late 30s, I'm not staying out very late. I'm really more of a day drinker. But my dad used to say, just like any human being used to say, and still says to this day, bad things happen later at night. And I know this was, you know, during the day. I just mean in general. Like when you're out partying, when you're out drinking late at night, I'm more of a day drinker now, partly because I can't stay up that late. But you start talking 11, 12, 1 in the morning, that's when a lot of guys historically have been in fights. If you avoid those situations, it's those problems don't fall in your lap. Now, I'm not saying don't go out at night. I'm not saying don't have a good time. But these discussions over the next month leading into the draft about all these individuals will be a lot about their ability, will be a lot about their talent, how they fit the scheme, how they fit whatever play we're going to run or whatever defense and what we ask our players to do at different positions. But a majority of it will be about the guy. And this is where the work of your scouts, of everyone that went through the program, of your team's connection to that program and inside the building, inside that campus, to truly get to know these guys. And even when you truly get to know these guys, you don't get to hold their hand. Nick Saban, Kirby Smart, these guys can hold your hand basically all year long. It's not the case with the NFL. And part of it, like, this is a business. I don't even want to hold your hand. If I have to, then we probably have some issues already. So, sad situation. And I think these are the type of situations that get talked about in draft time. So, we'll have to see how this continues to play out.
Allstate wants to remind fans that mayhem is everywhere, like at your pregame barbecue. While you prep your meats, that grease trap you forgot to empty is prepping to smoke your porch, garage, and the car inside. And without the right home and auto insurance coverage, the cost to repair this could eat up your savings. So bundle home and auto with Allstate to save and get protected from mayhem like this. Bundled savings vary and are not available in every state. Coverage is subject to policy terms and conditions.
There are some things that are too good to keep a secret. Like how your Amex Platinum card helps you have the perfect trip. I'd like to check into the Centurion Lounge. Or how it seems like you always get those hard-to-snag tables.
Ooh, yum.
And how you get the most out of select can't-miss events. With access to the Centurion Lounge, Resi Priority Notify, and Amex card member benefits at select events, you'll have to share. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
When you're hiring for your small business, You want to find quality professionals that are right for the role. That's why you have to check out LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn Jobs has the tools to help find the right professionals for your team faster and for free. LinkedIn isn't just a job board. They help you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else. Did you know 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites? LinkedIn's the only one I use. On LinkedIn, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Hire professionals like a professional on LinkedIn. LinkedIn is constantly finding ways to make the process easier. They even just launched a feature that helps you write job descriptions, making the process even easier and quicker. Post your job for free at linkedin.com/john. That's linkedin.com/john to post your job for free. Terms and conditions apply. I got to do somewhat of a 180 because the first year I was really hard on this guy. And I had heard really good things. Obviously, knowing the guys from Kansas City, everyone really liked Ryan Poles. Just high-level guy, had a front-row seat and been a big part of everything the Chiefs did in their personnel department. But people just really liked him. And kind of, I always heard like humble, kind of low-key guy. And then his first introduction as the Bears GM, he said something that I was like, oh my God. He said, basically, we're going to take back the North. Then, within his first year, he's trading for Chase Claypool. I think if he could, he would walk back the statement on the North and obviously the trade of Chase Claypool. Now, I give anyone a little bit of leeway early on a job. I don't care what you do. You're going to make mistakes. You're going to have things you would like to take back. And as a GM in a very public job, we get to see all those mistakes and warts. There are things I'd like to take back that no one will ever know. Just like if you're listening, there are things when you started a company, when you first started working for somebody, when you first started dating someone, maybe your first marriage, a bad breakup, you would like to change. You don't get to do that. But for the most part, it's not public. Ryan Poles, the last, I would say, 12 to 18 months, has been one of the best GMs in the league. And every time I watch him talk, if you just watch him on McAfee, I went and watched his interview with the local press at the owners' meetings. You go, this guy's really, really impressive. And this is the guy, the way he communicates, the way he carries himself, is the guy that I had heard about with the Chiefs. And one thing he said at the owners' meetings, which I don't think a lot of teams do, and I think a lot of times in the NFL, scouts can feel like independent contractors. They're just out on the road collecting all this information. They're kind of part of the draft meetings, but ultimately, they feel kind of irrelevant. The coach, the GM are going to do whatever they want to do. Thanks for collecting the information. We're paying you $150,000. Keep on working, man. And you just feel like, and I know I used to feel like this, what am I even doing? Like, what's the point of all this? And Ryan Poles said that when they get back, I don't know if their draft meetings start this week or next week, they're going to split their scouting staff into teams and basically argue what they should do with the 9th pick. Some people are going to argue for offensive linemen. Some people are going to argue over wide receivers. Some people are going to argue over defensive players. And obviously trading back, they have a limited number of picks this year because of previous trades, is an option. But I do think empowering the people you work with is very, very important. Because to get the most out of anybody, like, money goes so far. Whether I pay you $50,000, whether I pay you $5 million. If you don't feel like the work you're doing matters, you're not going to get the best out of that individual. And I don't think it's shocking that an offensive lineman, who, let's face it, they're very team-oriented, Harbaugh, Jim did at the owners' meetings, went on this long kind of diatribe of the importance of the offensive lineman, right? No other position is dependent on everybody else quite like them, and they get no credit. They really do. And if they fuck up, we all see it and crush them. But if they do well, no one really mentions them. It's like, yeah, they should have. And I think typically those guys, one, they've always made good coaches, But two, anyone who's ever met a college or an NFL offensive line, they're typically pretty smart guys. They're pretty well-rounded guys. And I've always had the theory of they get yelled at the most. They're constantly getting yelled at by their coach. More than I would say any other position, offensive and defensive linemen, but specifically offensive linemen. And they are also tasked with the job of protecting the highest paid guy and the most important guy in the quarterback. So not shocking that Ryan Poles understands the importance of inclusion with the staff. Now, I'm not saying this exercise of including these guys is going to lead to a better draft pick, but I do think it's very important. And I think if you never would because these guys can't go on record, but just went around the NFL and talked to individual scouts on individual teams, a lot of them would say, yeah, I know my job is important. They need me to do what I'm doing, but sometimes I don't feel that important. And one thing specifically, like position coaches in the NFL, historic amount of money. A wide receiver coach in the NFL makes $600,000-$700,000. Both coordinators making millions. D-line, O-line coaches make seven figures. Tight end coaches, I mean random coaches, are making $400,000-$500,000. The pay scale for scouts is nowhere near that. I mean, there are a ton of scouts all over the NFL, especially the younger ones, making under $100,000. Yet their job is to accumulate this information on first and second and third round picks. But they're not compensated like coaches. And it's a huge thing that scouts talk about a lot, that they feel underpaid. Most industries, I mean, listen, most of my friends do not work in sports. I'm not exactly in the media crew. Work in the private sector. Have been making a lot of money for a long time because you start at a much higher rate. In scouts, you don't make anything to start with. And same thing with coaches, but even a quality control coach, the lowest guy on the totem pole, typically starts like $80,000, $90,000. That's not the case. So including people in your operation, to me, always leads to a healthier building, a place where people want to work. I stopped watching the Dynasty. I just think it kind of pisses me off, the treatment of Belichick. Now, they didn't really talk about this in the documentary, but I know it's true because I know a lot of people were. Belichick did not care what any of the scouts thought. That's why a lot of scouts were pretty miserable there. Didn't pay well, and he did not give a crap what you thought. Now, there was a benefit to working for the Patriots over a 20-year span. You became a Super Bowl champion, and when you interviewed other places, I worked for Bill Belichick. I was a part of Super Bowl teams. I kind of have a piece of the secret sauce. I'm not talking coaches. I'm talking scouts. And a lot of them have gone on to other jobs and made a lot more money because of it. But he was not very inclusive at all. So props to Ryan Poles for getting that part of it. And I'm pretty excited to watch where the Bears are going. The Chiefs signed Carson Wentz. They were interested in Carson Wentz last year. And I don't know if they were quote-unquote scared off, but clearly, Carson Wentz did not sign till the middle of the season. A lot of teams were not feeling the guy. There were a lot of perception had become reality. Hard to coach, not an easy guy to have around, kind of played the victim mentality. I know the victim mentality plays on Twitter. It doesn't really play in a lot of high-level organizations. No one wants to hear you got screwed over. And I think Carson had to look in the mirror and take a huge, huge slice of humble pie. No one would mess with a guy until Sean McVay did. And sometimes you need a high-level person to throw you a lifeline. And then the perception can change a little bit. And I think Sean McVay is a big part of this signing. Because not only did he sign him, nothing came out about Carson Wentz being weird throughout the season. And when he finally played in the game against the 49ers, let's be real, he didn't look that terrible. Now, the Niners were playing their backups, but still, he looked like a functional NFL player. If that Rams thing had not happened and he had been out of the NFL for a year, I don't think the Chiefs signed him. But it's easier for Andy and Veach to go, listen, if we're going to put a guy in a meeting room every single day with the guy carrying our organization, we can have no question marks here. It's why they were so comfortable with Chad Henne. The character really matters. It's why last year, who'd they sign? Blaine Gabbert. Well, he had just been the right-hand man for Tom Brady for years. So I know he can be a good backup in terms of just showing up every day, doing the work, and helping the starter out. That was a massive question with Carson Wentz. Well, last year he played that role because Stetson Bennett was nowhere to be found, and he was sitting right next to Matt Stafford, who was obviously having one of the best years of his career. So I think Sean McVay, anytime a quarterback finds themselves in the wilderness, you got to try to get with the right coach. Because look at Sam Darnold. Sam Darnold was kind of a joke. A lot of people were like, this guy sucks. This guy's not an NFL quarterback. What are you doing? Gets with Kyle Shanahan. The moment Kyle Shanahan signed him, Trey Lance was done. He inevitably got traded a couple months later. And then a year later, after just a handful of snaps, Sam Darnold signs for $10 million to be the bridge quarterback from Minnesota. I don't know if that happens without the Kyle Shanahan situation. So you get with Kyle Shanahan, you get with Sean McVay, you get with Andy Reid. It can change the way the league views you. So, interesting signing. Obviously didn't cost the Chiefs, I'm sure, very much. I have not seen the amount of money they paid him. I would imagine it's pretty cheap. But, yeah. Hassan Reddick. You know, it's funny. In the NFL, more than most sports, you can be a really good player. But as you age and your contract gets bigger, if I have a high-priced team, I have to make tough decisions. I have to go, I don't know if this makes financial sense anymore, even if it's clear you're one of the best players on my team. Like, no one would argue that Reddick is not a really good player and is an impactful player for the Philadelphia Eagles, who every single year, especially these last couple and going into the season, their goal is to like compete for the NFC Championship. Not to just win the NFC East, to compete for the NFC Championship and be playing in the Super Bowl. And Reddick helps you do that. Now, you could say 2 years ago he was better, this year he chased some sacks, whatever. But your contract plays a big role. And the Eagles, once they signed Huff from the Jets, who's a younger player and kind of betting on the come moving forward, Reddick was done. And this story played out even before free agency when they basically told him, like, listen, we're not extending your contract. We'll give you the right to sniff around, see what you can get. And they traded him for a 2026 third-round pick. Now, that pick can go up to a 2024 or 26 second-round pick. But clearly, it was like, you're not coming back to this team. And this is the hard part about the NFL. Like, it's not like Howie and Vic Fangio think this guy can't play. You just have to kind of build your puzzle, and it constantly changes based on other guys' cap hits, based on who you've drafted, based on who you sign. And I think the Jets, and I told Colin this a couple days ago, and this has been a theme with the Jets all offseason, is they're all in this season like a 1990s New York Yankees, Cleveland Indians, some of the Houston Rockets team when they signed Charles Barkley and trade for Clyde Drexler. A lot of older guys. A lot of guys that if this works and everyone plays their potential, we should be pretty good. But if these guys get banged up, can't stay on the field, it could be a disaster. And I think the pressure involved with this team going into next year, because I said, I think Miami's worse. A Dolphins fan hit me and like, I know you think Christian Wilkins, but we signed all these other guys. I don't know. I'd rather have impact players than like five other starters, especially guys with some questions with injuries. But that's beside the point. The Bills lost a lot, but they still have Josh Allen, and the Patriots, I think, are going to blow. To me, the Jets are an all-time boom or bust. I'm betting on the bust, just history would say. And someone, and one thing I told Colin, because we were talking about Favre when he moved to Minnesota, the Minnesota Viking team in 2009, when Favre had one of the best years of his career, he was almost 70% completion percentage. I think it was like 68.5. That team was fucking loaded. They had 10 Pro Bowlers, multiple defensive linemen, multiple offensive linemen. They had a young Adrian Peterson. Obviously, Favre was awesome. And they had three Hall of Famers. I mean, obviously Favre, but Adrian Peterson and Steve Hutchinson. They were just really, really good. I don't think this Jets team is remotely close to that talented. Now, they do have some young, talented players, but that New York market, I saw it in Philly, my second year when the quote-unquote dream team. If it doesn't go well immediately, things can fracture. Why? Because there's not like this built-up group of equity. One thing the Chiefs have had last year, and even two years ago, remember when they went through that rough stretch when Mahomes wasn't playing that well? It's like all these guys have played together for a while. And you can lean on like, well, we'll be all right. The Jets have kind of built this mercenary culture, which I don't blame them. They don't have a choice once they traded for Aaron Rodgers, but that's how it kind of feels. And typically, that's not how it works in the NFL. So they're going to be one of the more fascinating teams this year. If it goes well, it'd be cool. I'm not against it going well. I'm just telling you, where I sit right now, I'm going to bet against it. And, you know, Tangent Tuesday, which I usually do on Monday, but because of Mayock's podcast, we had to push this podcast back until recording it on Tuesday, come out on Wednesday. I got home from the gym today, and my neighbors, who are from Philadelphia, older couple, big Eagles fan, and she walked up to me. She's like, did you check out that women's, she knows I'm a sports guy, women's basketball game? How incredible was that? She's like, I was just at the gym. Three people were talking about it. I was like, yeah, not in a million years. Well, I mean, in my lifetime, I have never, ever sat down to watch a college women's basketball game. I've never watched a dribble besides like on social media of the WNBA. And I would imagine a lot of people listening have not either. Again, this isn't a shit on them. It's just the ratings speak for themselves historically. Now, I think this is a unique occurrence. Like, I'm no dummy. When Otani's doing something crazy, it's like I'm watching every baseball game, I'm paying attention. You can't not pay attention to Caitlin Clark. I mean, she's scoring 40, hitting fadeaway threes. It was a cool moment. It really was. And not shocking to see high ratings, but also people are like, oh, it's so much more popular than the men's game. I just heard on the radio when I was driving back from the gym this morning that the men's games on Sunday did the highest ratings since 2019. Now, part of that, I'm sure, is gambling. Part of that is Duke, who got their ass kicked. But 15-plus million people watched. I don't think sports is that complicated. The reason why a lot of people came in to check out Caitlin Clark is because she's gained a lot of fame, a lot of star power. Guess what we like? Star power, right? Tom Brady, Michael Jordan, Tiger Woods. I mean, when they play, as your star builds, more and more people pay attention. I think the NCAA tournament in the men's game has more to do with probably the gambling, clearly, and just the nature of the one and done, or not the one and done, but if you lose, you're out. So there's a lot of urgency there. But I can't lie. I thought that was a pretty cool night, watching Caitlin Clark score all those points against the defending champs. I even stayed a little bit to watch the next game in UConn take down USC and the star player that USC has in Juju. But listen, it just shows you that this stuff is, it's not that hard to figure out. Now, she's clearly a generational player. I don't think there's ever been a player quite like her in the women's game. This isn't something like I wouldn't expect this to keep carrying over unless something like her happens again. And when they happen, like, I understand golf is not for everybody. Like, I'll be the first to admit, like, when I do these golf podcasts, it's more of a passion project for me. I'm watching. I know the audience is much smaller. But we'd all agree that you could not say the words Tiger Woods to anybody and not have them know who he is. And they've known about him for 25 years. Football, a huge reason why it became infinitely more popular the last 20 plus years, was Tom Brady and Peyton Manning. I've always said they are the Magic and Bird of the sport of football. Took it to a whole nother level. When baseball came storming back in the late 90s in the steroid era, if it was just me, you, and three other random guys hitting 60-plus home runs, it wouldn't have been as big. It would have been a big story, but it went to a different level when it was Mark McGwire and Barry Bonds. Stars sell. They always have. They always will.
Allstate wants to remind fans that mayhem is everywhere, like at your pregame barbecue. While you prep your meats, that grease trap you forgot to empty is prepping to smoke your porch, garage, and the car inside. And without the right home and auto insurance coverage, the cost to repair this could eat up your savings. So bundle home and auto with Allstate to save and get protected from mayhem like this. Bundled savings vary and are not available in every state. Coverage is subject to policy terms and conditions.
There's no distance too far for the perfect trip.
Hi, checking in for...
Or the perfect table.
Hey, where are you?
Coming!
And when you get access to Resi Priority Notify with your Amex Platinum card...
Hey, this looks amazing!
I'm so glad you made it.
And travel benefits at fine hotels and resorts booked through Amex Travel. It's worth the trip. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
You put it off long enough, it's time to replace your tires. Tire Rack has tires that will elevate your drive. Touring tires for commuter comfort. Performance tires for sporty handling. All-terrain tires for on- and off-road adventure. Go to TireRack.com to get started. Not sure where to begin? Use the Tire Decision Guide to get a personalized tire recommendation. The right tires for how, what, and where you drive. Choose from the full line of Bridgestone tires. Ship fast and free to a recommended installer near you. Or choose the convenience of mobile tire installation. They'll bring your new tires to your home or office and install them on site. Doesn't get much easier than that. Go to TireRack.com/Colin to see their Bridgestone test results, tire ratings, and consumer reviews, and be sure to check out all their current special offers. Great tires, great deal. What more could you ask for? That's TireRack.com/Colin. TireRack.com, the way tire buying should be.
Okay, time for a little Middlecoff mailbag. Very, very easy to get involved. You just go into my DMs on Instagram. It's my name, two Fs, and ask a question, any question. Get your question answered here on the show. So we'll start with EA. I think it's his initials. For the bag, Coward and others have said this, so obviously it is known. But quarterback success is often a product of the roster, coaching, culture, etc. Sometimes I think we call quarterbacks busts without ever getting to see them in a winning environment. Anyways, who are some quarterbacks that have truly been busts? And or what percentage of busts are truly, quote unquote, busts? It's a good question. Because I think some guys clearly are overdrafted, right? Let's use Marcus Mariota. He was drafted number 2 overall and is just not a starting quarterback. But when the dust settles, you're going to look and Marcus Mariota is going to have a 14-year NFL career. So by no means was he a failure, but relative to his draft status, he did not live up to it. So to me, like Marcus Mariota, there's a difference of a guy that plays for a long time. Like, he's not a bust. He just was overdrafted. Jamarcus Russell literally didn't try. Didn't try. Didn't study. Didn't care. Didn't give a shit. So like Mariota tries. He's just not good enough. Jamarcus Russell, Johnny Manziel, if you watch his documentary, which honestly I thought was kind of cringe. I really do. Kind of bragging about screwing around, which I get it. I mean, it's what he did, but it's like, I even saw Edelman and some of those guys were like offended by it, which I don't blame anyone in the NFL because the work ethic that it takes to sustain your spot and what you are given as a high pick is the chances you get over the non-high picks. Like, you're a bust when you don't give a shit, when you don't try. Now, think about this quarterback class right now, or, you know, the guys that are all moving on. Trey Lance, Justin Fields, Mac Jones. You can't make statements on young players who their career's not done. Are they going to be busts? I don't know. Are they out of the league in a year? Because if they are, then that's a disaster. But right now, all those guys clearly were overdrafted, right? Zach Wilson, Trey Lance, Fields, and Mac Jones, Kenny Pickett. But you have to see the totality of the operation. Now, any guy that's Ryan Leaf, I mean, he's even told you,
right? Just didn't have the maturity, work ethic, and the injuries. To me, you got to be washed out of the league to be a bust. I think we overuse that term sometimes. Mayock talked about it with Cleveland Farrell, who he drafted number 4 overall. And I put him and Solomon Thomas under the same umbrella. Both those guys are going to play in the NFL for 10 years. They were not failures because teams continue to want them to play. Hell, the 49ers were like massive injury when Farrell got hurt. Now you look back, should have been a second. If he's a third round pick, it's like you got a 10-year player as a third round pick. That's a great selection. But when you draft a guy in the top 10 or top 5, the expectation that comes along with it happens immediately. So I hear you. I think that kind of word, just in general, is probably used too liberally, it is used too often, right? To be a bust, you have to just want no part of football, and you're out of the league quick. I'm excited about the NFL keeping the Christmas Day schedule. They mentioned there would need to be a couple games on Saturday so teams have enough rest. In my opinion, they should choose the AFC division winners from the same conference last year to play on both Saturday and then again on Wednesday. Chiefs, Bills, Ravens, Texans all have stud quarterbacks. It would be fantastic. What are your thoughts on scheduling? You know, what's funny is we had a bunch of people over on Thanksgiving. Or not Thanksgiving, Easter. And, you know, the booze was flowing. Honestly, it was kind of struggling. I'm not a big Sunday drinker because I like doing work on Monday, but I was hurting yesterday. But I battled through. And booze was flowing, and we were talking about, like, how are they going to do that? And I started thinking, I wonder if they take the two Thursday game, or the Thursday game from the previous week, and both those two teams play on Wednesday against different opponents, and then maybe a team coming off a bye week, because no one's going Sunday to Wednesday. So I do think it's going to be pretty complicated, and I wonder if they're working through that right now. Now, you could argue if it's a team off a Sunday bye into Wednesday, that's an advantage of a team Thursday to Wednesday, but I think it's going to be a little complicated. So, cross my mind, too. Love the show, 3 and Out, listen every episode. Henry, this is from Henry. I'm an artist living in New York, 26 years old, and the only thing I'm passionate about is as art is football. Been a lifelong Commanders fan, once the Redskins. I knew that. First game I've ever watched was the last time they won a playoff game. I'm thinking about trying to find my way into a career in sports media, or maybe another role in the NFL. I've got a good college degree, I'm a strong writer, and I have a creative skill set I've developed through my artwork. Was wondering if you had any advice for someone in my position, things to do, jobs to look at. I know it's a competitive field to break into, but I think when you just ask like a general question like that, you kind of got to narrow it down. Like, you want to work in football. Well, do you want to try to be like a scout? Do you want to try to be a PR guy? Do you want to try to be like a, you know, a sales guy? I think you kind of got to pick a lane to get your foot in the door. And once you pick a lane, you know, the easiest place to probably get your foot in the door would be something sales-wise, but you're creative. Right, so if you're creative, maybe it makes more sense to try to get into the production side of an NFL team. All these teams now have big operations behind the scenes, whether it's YouTube, whether it's the website, whether it's the doing everything surrounding about the in-house media team. Now, I don't know what your background is, you know, even in art, but I would try to do something that way would be my best advice, but I think the hard part is when you're really general, you know, it's like casting a huge net into the ocean. It doesn't really work that way because they're going to ask, well, what do you want to do? Right? So, like, what are you doing when we hire you? I guess would be my question. Huge fan of the pod. Two questions. As a Rams fan, hopefully that answered your question. What position did the Rams draft with their first round pick? Which is kind of crazy. They haven't had one in like a decade. I play in a pick'em league every NFL season for $20, and this year I won, taking home $200. Being a small wager from the beginning, I rolled it over to the Chiefs winning the Super Bowl and turned it into $400. Look at you. I haven't cashed it out yet. I was wondering which Final Four team I would put it on to win the national title. UConn has been dominant, and ED for Purdue may be the biggest mismatch in college hoops. But should I take a chance on Alabama 13-1 or NC State 20-1? I wouldn't touch either one of those. To me, the value for betting on the Final Four simply would be Purdue. You're getting them basically 2.5-1. And I know NC State is one of the crazier stretches we've ever seen. I mean, they were about to not make the tournament, then they win the ACC tournament, and they just rattled off 4 straight wins. I'm pretty confident Purdue's going to beat them. And then you just get in this one-game situation, can Purdue beat UConn? Alabama's been an awesome story. Hard to see them beating UConn. It really is. But, I mean, that dude Nelson they got from North Dakota State, Sears the point guard, he looks like a little Jalen Brunson or something. But I think if you were going to take one of the non-UConn teams, because UConn right now is like minus 250, so you'd bet 400 to win, I think, like $150. I wouldn't necessarily recommend doing this, because I think UConn is going to have to fuck up to not win the national championship, but it would take Purdue to win it. That's if I was going to bet on one of the three underdogs, it would be them. Because basically, you just look at it like, they're going to beat NC State. They're a big favorite. Can they just, I don't want to say shock the world, because they're a one seed too. But could they, what are they going to be? 5-6 point underdog in that game? Depending on how both teams look, you know, assuming UConn and Purdue win. Maybe a 7 point underdog. Could they just win that game? That's what I would do. I would say the Rams, I mean, I would say a defensive lineman, you would think that they're going to be in the mix for one of the defensive tackles with Donald retiring. Little bit of a sleeper. What if Penix is there? That to me would be the sleeper. But I would say defensive lineman. Question for the pod. Watching your podcast with Mayock was awesome. He's one of the people who's really increased my overall interest in football and the draft. So thank you for having him on. Same impact as well. The conversation had me wondering about your career as a scout. If you can talk about it, what was your biggest success in your career as far as player you may have pounded the table for before the draft while at Fresno that turned out to be a great player? That's so long ago now. You know, the recruiting process, when I got there, Derek Carr was already committed. We had the recruiting classes we had some pretty good classes, but also had some whiffs. The thing is, at Fresno State, Robbie Rouse, I mean, he was, Coach Hill loved him too. He went on to be the all-time leading rusher until Ronnie Rivers, who's now with the Rams, broke his record. I'd be lying if I said, like, they were picking the players. Again, these guys, in college, it really was more about your college coaches going out, and then you would just watch and kind of confirm if that's who you're going to offer or not with the head coach. It wasn't as much like the NFL where you were like, hey, we should draft this guy in the fourth round. It was less of that when I was at Fresno State. And Coach Hill just kind of ran the recruiting process. He was the GM / like team president, essentially. Here's a good one. You and Colin are clowns. Appreciate the note. How did the prime rib turn out in the smoker? What do you think of the Reddick trade in return? What do you think the disconnect was? I did for Easter, I bought a prime rib from the Scottsdale Meat Market, which is elite. I mean, that the options you have, if you're ever in Arizona, if you live in Arizona and you're going to barbecue, Scottsdale Meat Market, this is unpaid ad, fantastic. My brother's been doing this for years, is smoking the prime rib. So I'm like, I'll do that. And I got an 11-pounder, bone-in, and smoked that bad boy on the Traeger for about 3 hours. I probably could have left it on there for another 20 minutes. I think the hard part with prime rib, and I don't pretend to be some meat master here, and I'm a relatively newbie to the smoker. I've had the Traeger since Thanksgiving. Is with a prime rib, and maybe it's like this with some other meats too, is it's supposed to cook once you take it off the smoker another 7 to 10 degrees. You know, once you take it off and put it on your cutting board and you kind of wrap it in tin foil, And it's a really hard thing to gauge because different parts of the meat, I would say, are more cooked than others. The one thing with prime rib is like it actually tastes pretty good, closer to rare and medium rare. But it kind of scares you as someone that does steaks. Like you have a pretty good idea what medium rare, medium, you know, I don't really eat my steaks rare, but you can eat prime rib rare. And I think it tastes pretty good. So one thing about prime rib, if you get a big one, I got 11 pounder. Shit was expensive. It was like $350, but it was fantastic. And I don't want to toot my own horn because the smoker did most of the work. And the guy at the meat market gave me the dry rub. I said, what's the best dry rub you have for this prime rib? He's like, well, I got this bad boy right here. He's like, cut a couple cloves of garlic, put it in a bowl, mix it all together, put it on. My brother said, add a couple sticks of butter to the top. Highly recommend smoking a prime rib. And I would say the Reddick trade, I talked about on the podcast, I just think it's simple value with the Eagles. They weren't going to extend him. He's older. It's not that they don't think he's a good player. They need Nolan Smith to kind of come on, and the Jets are just in win-now mode, so they don't really have a choice. I know this is very random, but I was hoping you might be able to do me a favor. I listen religiously to your podcast. About 6 months ago, Colin and Nick were on together discussing ideas for the NFL. Nick brought up an international week. I thought it was very interesting. I ended up making a presentation on the idea, and it circulated as a networking tool to a bunch of folks in the league. Anyways, I ended up getting a job out of it, working in corporate strategy at the league office. Dream job. I don't know if you have a relationship to Nick, but I would love to send him the presentation, thank him if ever possible. Thanks a million. You have really inspired me to go all in. That's cool. Little league employee. I'll see what I can do there. Would an international week, so you're saying like every team in the league play internationally on a given week? That's interesting. I didn't hear his theory, but clearly the league is very, very active internationally. Maybe he was onto something, and maybe you are too. Now, Raj is hearing your idea, so that's fucking cool. I'm a diehard Colts fan and grew up on Peyton Manning and then Andrew Luck into high school and college. As such, Colts fans got used to a lot of winning over the course of a 20-year period, and I think we have high standards for the club. Ballard has been the GM of the Colts since 17. Since then, he's never won the division. Embarrassing. We've won one playoff game and only made the playoffs twice. He values the draft very highly and is reluctant to use free agency to fill holes in the roster. He also has a tendency to double down on guys he's drafted that can't perform. He's made the comment before that he'd rather go young with the roster than pay A-plus money to B players in free agency. Before we dive deeper on him, I don't necessarily disagree with that. Despite all these facets, I constantly hear he's a great GM and talent evaluator. I'm wondering what metrics people around the league use to judge other GMs. Well, I think he's well-liked, so I think people like him a lot. And I think there's a balance, right? Because clearly they invest a lot in their own players. Now, you could say, well, you're not exactly investing into, like, fucking Trent Williams and Micah Parsons. Like, who on your team do you have to have? Like, Quentin Nelson? Like, on your team right now, who is a non-negotiable, we got to have this guy? When you close your eyes, think about the Colts, like, how many are there? So you could push back, like, why we keep doubling down on the guys we drafted, but it's not like we're drafting Ray Lewis and Derek Thomas and Barry Sanders. Jonathan Taylor, okay, really good pick. We invest in him, keep him. Quentin Nelson, really good pick, invest in him, keep him. Like, Michael Pittman, really good player, good player. But, like, is he maker breaking you? And again, I understand signing him, but, like, that's kind of the core of the team. And is that good enough to compete in the AFC? And the answer is clearly no. And I agree with the overall sentiment that you just overpay, right, in free agency. Not really debatable. But it's like the housing market right now. If you live in a nicer area that's popular, you're going to have to pay more than you want for a house. Welcome to life. Like, do you want to live there or not? Because if you don't, then move. And eventually in free agency, you got to fill some holes. So yeah, you got to overpay a little bit, but pay a guy or two. It's not that crazy. Then just be bottom feeding. So I think it is fair to wonder why they're never active at all. And like you said, if you're of a certain age and you grew up the Peyton Manning teams, hell, even the Luck teams, You were used to starting the season to go, we can compete with anybody. Whether that turned out to be the case at the end of the year or not, like, you thought you had a chance. I think it's fair to say these last 5 years, that's not been the case. Now, the trump card with this team moving forward is going to be the quarterback and the coach. It looks like you have a Shanahan, a McVay, a LaFleur, like a pretty special play caller. So if that's the case, you're in good shape. But then it's on him to mold the quarterback to be a really good player, slash it's on the quarterback to figure out ways to stay healthy. So you have this big, like, kind of variable that can change your franchise. If he becomes a top 10 guy, you're going to be good. If he cannot stay healthy or has struggles, you're going to be in trouble. And then everyone's going to get fired, probably except the coach. Been a fan of the pod for a year now. I'm pumped when I get the notification for a new episode. If you could play golf with any three people, who would it be and which course would you play? You know, this question gets asked a lot, right? If you could have played golf with anybody, if you could have dinner with anybody. I think it's a tough question because, like, there would be people that you would want to have dinner with or play golf with that aren't, quote-unquote, in the sporting world. Like, it'd be kind of cool to, I don't know, spend 5 hours with Warren Buffett, Jeff Bezos. I mean, there'd be certain individuals that, if you like certain things in life, that are bigger than sports. But if we just kept it to sports, I mean, it would be hard to not want to spend 4 hours on a golf course with Tiger Woods. So if I was just keeping it to sports, I'd probably go Tiger, Brady, Michael. I'd keep it pretty simple. But if we were opening it up to anybody, it probably wouldn't be any athlete or coach or anything under that umbrella. I want to revisit the take you had on January 4th, saying Penix is the clear number two in the 24 draft. I said that after the Texas game. I was excited. He just made me $8,000, so we got to take it somewhat with a grain of salt. Best game of his career. But, you know, sometimes I get excited after a performance. I know he didn't play great in the national championship game, but I really don't understand why you moved off this take. I'm a Commanders fan, and I really don't see it with Daniels or May. It's frustrating to me that Penix and Nix, two guys who put out so much great tape, aren't even being considered as potentially the number two guy. As you once put it, we overthink this one. I moved off the take a little bit because in the national championship game, he played an NFL team. And that NFL team had a shitload of NFL defensive linemen. And they hit him, and they hit him, and they hit him. And it phased him. And when you play the Eagles, Jalen Carter, Jordan Davis, Huff, Sweat, Nolan Smith, these guys are lined up over you and they're going to hit you. The Giants, I don't know how good they're going to be. Offense has a lot of questions. Their defensive line is rolling out some dudes. The Cowboys have Micah Parsons. So 6 games a year, you are facing hundreds of millions of dollars worth of NFL defensive line talent. And I just watched that guy get peppered and it really phases game. Now, obviously getting hit as a quarterback phases Tom Brady or Peyton Manning. But it was like he could barely get up. And it was like that in the Oregon game. I've never disputed, and Mayock talked about it, just on individual throws, he throws as good as anyone not named Caleb Williams, if not better. But you watch the physicality of it. If you took him at two, you're not going to... I wouldn't act like you were crazy. But he is 24 years old. The injury stuff, I think it's fair to go, that'd be very, very bold. No one disputes in the clean pocket throwing the ball. It's as beautiful as it gets. NFL or college. The deep ball, it's unreal. But you do have to factor in, like, getting hit. I mean, your team's not going to be as good right away. So I didn't necessarily... One, I hadn't really thought that. I watched that game. I was excited. The more and more information... I don't agree with people acting like he's a second-round pick. Like, I would take the guy if the Raiders or Broncos or whoever takes him in 13. I do understand, though, comparing him to other guys that are 20, 21 years old, more physical upside, more durability, guys that don't have durability question marks. I get it. In a vacuum, kid's a fucking baller. I think he's on a different level than Bo Nix. But it just gets back to, it's hard for that visual to get out of my mind because they hit him. And it's why I like Bryce Young. When he played Georgia 2 years, when they played him back to back, right? They played him in the SEC championship game and then he played him in the national championship game and Georgia beat him. He beat Georgia once and then Georgia beat him when Mechie what's his name? Not Jonah Williams, but the hell's the first? My brain is not working. The dude on the Lions, who they both tore their ACLs, one in the Georgia game and the other in the semifinal game. And then Bryce had nobody relative to those two guys. And he was just getting peppered. He just kept getting up. You're like, God, this guy's unfazed. And it Penix a couple times looked like he couldn't really get up. It made me nervous. I don't question his toughness or anything. I do just question, like, when the durability stuff's in the back of your mind. But I hear you. Like, if you took Michael Penix at number two overall, it would be, whoa! Now, I saw today the gambling lines. Jaden Daniels, for a while, was the favorite. Now it's flipped. Drake May technically is the betting favorite. It's still relatively close, but it's pretty clear it's going to be one of those two guys, and most people I know think it's going to be Drake May. But if you just throw on the tape of Drake May versus Michael Penix, like, one guy is better than others in 2023. During the season, 2023, Michael Penix, better player than Drake May. But part of drafting is the future. If we just went off like, you're never going to be any good, Josh Allen would have sucked. But that's not the way football works. You keep improving. Chiefs fan here. While we have been very blessed recently, Kelce is most likely retiring in the next couple years, and we don't have a replacement option as of now. Do you think they should draft the tight end in the first three rounds so he can learn and develop under Kelce? Also, do you think the player voted grades where overall the Chiefs were bottom five in the league impact the team going forward? I've said this before. I don't think they matter at all. This is not college football. I'm not recruiting you. I recruit you with my money. Now, is it ideal for, is it kind of embarrassing for the teams? Yes. But I pay you, right? I pay you $20 million. Sorry, your seat's not a little nicer. Now, you could argue doing that is not an ideal way to run a business. And we could argue that all day long. It's probably a lot of truth in that. I don't know all the details. Only the guy going to work there every day truly knows. I'm not going in any of these buildings. I can't speak to it. Obviously, the newer buildings like the Raiders or this Chargers new building, no one's going to complain. Some of these older buildings, people complain. And there's a difference of like Michael Bidwell's terrible owner. Clark Hunt's a little cheap. Like, it's historically, he's been a little cheap. Does he need to change a little bit? Yes. Does that matter at all as long as Andy Reid and Patrick Mahomes are there? Because they're chairs instead of stools or whatever the hell. So I think that stuff's pretty overrated when it comes to some of those NFLPA grades with the good teams. Ideally, if you're a team, you'd like to have, you know, A pluses across the board, but that clearly wasn't the case for the Chiefs. One thing I've heard, beside Bauer's terrible tight end draft, maybe the Chiefs will like someone. I just don't know if there's a tight end. You know, they're drafting the end of the rounds. Maybe they take a guy on the second day. But, yeah, I mean, I think this Rashee Rice thing, you know, wide receiver, tight end, offensive line, I think it's pretty clear who they're going to take in the first couple rounds. I'd be shocked if they don't take a tackle and a wide receiver. Love the pod. About the hip drop tackle. I can't bullshit about player safety as long as they use artificial turf. They could get rid of way more serious injuries by just switching to grass. I know they won't, because the poor billionaire owners would complain, but the hip drop tackle almost seems like a scapegoat. I totally understand. Hate hypocrites. Listen every day. What are your thoughts on the new hybrid kickoff? I think it's weird going away from the original kickoff we've grown up on and watched our whole lives, but I don't think I hate it. Gives better chances for returns and less boring touchbacks and bullshit fair catches. Totally agree. I do understand a couple teams voted against it. I know the Niners were one of them, and they were asked why they voted against it, and simply because it's like a pretty dramatic change. But the NFL, like, is not really afraid of change. And it's not that complicated. I just think we want more action. And that play had become irrelevant. That play for a long period of time, I don't care whether you played peewee football through the NFL, if you had a dynamic kickoff return guy, you had to be on your toes because that guy could take it let alone to the house, but like 30, 40 yards and get to the 50-yard line. Now, I just think we're going to see so much creativity. I think it's going to be interesting to put like cool, exciting players back there. What if you're the Niners and throw Christian McCaffrey there? What if you're the Eagles and you throw Saquon Barkley back there? Right? What if you're Tampa Bay and you throw the white guy back there? What if you just throw guys back there and you might not do it all the time, but like tie game, second half, in a big divisional game. Like, why wouldn't you want Deebo Samuel back there? Or, you know, a player like that. I think you're going to see more and more of that, which never would have happened before, ever. But now you go, well, that's like one of his touches. He's not taking a huge collision. And I think it gives the opportunity for good special teams coaches to really show creativity. It's going to be a shit show early on. I'm still a little confused by the rules. I guess I need to reread them. I guess it's, you know, from the 20 to the goal line, you have to return it. And if it goes in past the goal line, it comes out to the 35. And if it goes out of bounds, it goes to the 30, or excuse me, the 40. I got to reread back on the rules. But clearly, teams are going to try to kick it between the 20 and the goal line and then tackle the guy, you know, within the 15-yard line. So there are going to be some guys that kick it out of bounds trying to get too tricky on the little kick. I also think this impacts, because touchbacks now aren't great. Again, I forget the exact yard line. I don't have it off the top of my head. You know, like the 49ers drafted Moody in the third round because he had a powerful leg. So a lot of these kickers that just kicked it out of the end zone, that attribute is not as important. Not that that was the end-all, be-all to begin with, but that changed a little bit. Was listening to the Joel Klatt show, and he brought up Penix to the Dolphins. Wondering what your take is on that. Well, the only way you would draft Penix, if you're the Dolphins, is if you're not going to extend Tua. If they extend Tua in the next month or plan on doing it after the draft, you're not taking Michael Penix. Maybe they're waiting to see if they can draft Michael Penix. I would say if the Dolphins drafted Michael Penix, would tell you everything you need to know what they think of Tua Tagovailoa. So I think that would be a little stunning, but I also think paying him $200 million is insanity. But, you know, who am I? Question for the mailbag. Eagles fan all my life. Think Howie does a good job, and Lurie's a good owner. But this blind spot with Sirianni is concerning. He's not a good coach, and you can see it. I think this upcoming year is a disaster waiting to happen. They lose two or three games in a row in the beginning of the year, and this city will be pitchforks out. But another problem is, if they win and the offense is awesome, Kellen is now looked at as a head coaching candidate. And we are stuck with Nick and looking for a new OC, or do we fire Nick and make Kellen the head coach? See, disaster, even if we win. Let's face it. If the Eagles had a do-over, and this is impossible to do because you were winning, and I don't blame them for not doing it, but there's not a team in the league that would take Sirianni over Shane Steichen. Just based on when we've seen a year of Shane Steichen compete with Gardner Minshew, but he's an elite play caller. Sirianni is a motivator who, as we saw this year, didn't look like a great motivator. Now, people within the Eagles like the guy, but from a schematic standpoint, I just don't know what he's bringing to the table. I struggle with an offensive coach who's a CEO. I can live, because we've seen it historically work a lot, defensive guys, CEO-level guys. Tomlin, Harbaugh's a special team / DB guy. Parcells forever was a CEO, defensive guy. I just think as an offensive guy, like, why can't you call the plays? And I know we saw him for a little bit with Jalen's second year, and it was a disaster. But like 3 years later, you just have no ability to do it. Kellen Moore's making a lot of money. The Eagles paid him a lot of money. I do think that they dramatically upgraded at the position, or the assistant, you know, the two coordinators in Vic and Kellen. But I hear you. It's hard to shake what happened last year, and it falls on Nick's feet. It's one thing, like McCarthy is a good example. That game was embarrassing. It was bad. But like, they had played pretty well up into the playoff game. It's why that game was so shocking, and they got their ass kicked. But say this about Mike McCarthy, who takes a lot of shit. I've seen him call plays and it works. Aaron Rodgers, Dak Prescott, like, people can make fun of Mike McCarthy as a head coach. No one can dispute the guy can run an offense. Nick Sirianni cannot run an offense. You'd be like, well, he's 65, you know, he's old. No, fucking guy's like 43 years old. So yeah, I'd say it's pretty concerning. And I hear you. Like, if it goes well, let's say you're the number one seed and your offense is incredible. Well, Sirianni's not getting the credit. Kellen Moore would get the credit. And then you have a problem on your hands again. Now, let's just hypothetically say you have the best offense and Jalen's an MVP candidate. Is Kellen a lock to be an NFL head coach? I would say no, but it's higher than 50-50 because he's been viewed highly before, had a rough year with the Chargers, though Brandon Staley gets most of the criticism. And then you, boom, resurrect yourself again. He would definitely get interviews. Anytime you're getting interviews, you can be the head coach. So I hear you. I don't think it's a blind spot. I think it's pretty well documented. They were very close to firing Nick Sirianni. And if Nick Sirianni had been fired, I don't think anyone would argue he got screwed. But, like, you invest in a guy, he just a year ago, I mean, he wasn't calling the plays. Dykin was, but he was the head coach. You were in the Super Bowl. So you're getting one more year, but he's just to go in with a guy on a hot seat, and the Cowboys are going to face this too, and a lot of other teams. Like, Saul is on the hot seat. That pressure, if he doesn't go right immediately, can just crumble. It's like a brush fire turns into the whole house burned down. And you're right. If it goes well, the conversation is like, well, we can't let Kellen Moore get out the door. You could argue Sirianni goes well or goes bad. Might not be the head coach in 2025 no matter what. Good call.
The Volume.
Allstate wants to remind fans that mayhem is everywhere. Like at your pregame barbecue. While you prep your meats, that grease trap you forgot to empty is prepping to smoke your porch, garage, and the car inside. And without the right home and auto insurance coverage, the cost to repair this could eat up your savings. So bundle home and auto with Allstate to save and get protected from mayhem like this. Bundled savings vary and are not available in every state. Coverage is subject to policy terms and conditions.
This is it. We've got an Amex Platinum Pro on our hands, ladies and gentlemen. We haven't seen anyone relax like this before in the Centurion Lounge. Is he connecting to complimentary Wi-Fi? Oh, my. Look at that. He is. And you will not believe where he's going next. The Amex dedicated card member entrance for the win. Unbelievable.
When you get travel perks with Amex Platinum, you're part of the action. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
It's Freddie Prinze Jr. and Jeff Dye back in the ring. Wrestling with Freddie makes its triumphant return for an electrifying fourth season. Hey, Jeff. Are you ready to rumble our way into an all-new season of Wrestling with Freddy?
You better believe I have. I've been practicing my body slams, and I'm jacked.
All right, don't go injuring yourself now. We'll be highlighting the best stories and matches of the week in wrestling from AEW, WWE, and have one-on-one talks with the best talents in the world of pro wrestling.
Listen to Wrestling with Freddy on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.